Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is one of our deep dives. We're going to dive deep into the return of Luke Skywalker, the Disney Gallery episode, focusing on the final episode of season 2 of Mandalorian, which, I don't know if you heard, spoiler, ends with Luke Skywalker, and we're going to talk about that Disney Gallery episode. We're excited to do it. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. Man, we love looking behind the scenes, but man, the things we can learn about the Star Wars sagas we love by just listening to the creators is also valuable. And plus seeing Mark Hamill playing with a Star Wars toy.
We got to see creators play with toys, and it was like we were listening to Filoni and Favreau do their very own Star Wars podcast. So that was very nice. Before we get into all that, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are continuing to recommend Out of the Shadows by Justina Ireland. We're getting it on our schedules. We're going to be discussing that newest High Republic book very, very soon. If you want to be all caught up, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. Again,
audibletrial.com/forcecenter for a free audio book. But that is not all, Ken. What else do we have?
That's right. We still have this great offer from Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, and they're offering 35% off across their website with a special forcecenter code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Lightsaber Collection, a beautiful collection of lightsabers. It's all in the title. Check it out with the code FC35.
Yeah, it's a good one for us to be celebrating today because this episode of Disney Gallery has lots of beautiful green Luke Skywalker lightsaber, and there's a picture of that in the book. Anyway, let's dive into this episode of Disney Gallery. Disney Gallery has been a series they've been doing for Mandalorian. They've been doing a whole great one for season one. Then they did one episode for season two that didn't have anything about that final episode. And now here, a few months down the line, we get this whole episode that's all about the Mandalorian season two finale and focusing truly just on the return of Luke Skywalker with a little side of R2-D2. But it's really about that end. And it's about a 40-minute special. So let's dive into talking about them talking about the Mandalorian. So, Ken, here's where I want to start. You know, some time has passed. And I want to know if your feelings have changed. How are you feeling about Luke's appearance in The Mandalorian, both from a character storytelling perspective and now from a tech perspective?
Yeah, that's a great question to start this discussion here. I have not gone back and visited Mandalorian season two since it aired. I haven't done a rewatch, nothing like that. That'll happen eventually, of course, just as a fan or as a podcaster. I'm sure we'll do that. So that moment, that finale, everything about it still it's pretty strong on my mind. I still really enjoy it. I still really think it's a great use of a character, just the right time. And it's intriguing and is hopefully potentially maybe going to lead to more storytelling. It definitely has already led to a great poster, right? Grogu, lightsaber crystals, all that stuff. But I still love that. The tech stuff, I was on that side of, all right. It hit, it was good. It was good. It was all right. It was fine. It worked. And it tripped me up a little bit. And I can't deny that. And there was some stuff in this episode that made me look back on the tech at the time, and I don't have as much worry about it now. And I know there's they brought in this deepfake expert we heard later on. This is not even covered in the gallery. Maybe they improved it. Sure, great. But I loved Richard Bluff saying with the deepfake technology at the time, they still needed to go with the direction they felt. And I really enjoyed getting that perspective and insight, why they made the choice and why they went ahead and did it. And I think I'm even more positive on it now.
Oh, that's great. I really love hearing that. And I agree with you. That was, I think, for the tech conversation, probably the key quote of Richard Bluff saying for the way the technology existed at the time and with the speed that deepfake is moving, right? It is changing a month later. Yeah, I think this was really fun for me to revisit just the idea of Luke coming back through this Disney Gallery special because I've thought about it a lot, but I haven't rewatched the episodes either. That's just a function of time and wanting to watch a lot of other things. I really deeply love season two and can't wait to just sit down and go on the ride again and see how it impacts differently or just go through the joy again. Mm-hmm. But for me, I'm still just incredibly in love with the character stuff and the storytelling stuff. There's a lot in this episode where they talk about it's fun to see Luke in his prime as a Jedi. What kind of Jedi stuff was he up to? And I just so deeply love the simple core of the storytelling in season two, that Grogu is a child who needs help and Luke is one of the only people who could possibly give it to him. And he calls out and Luke shows up. And the fact that hallway scene gets compared to Vader in Rogue One on an aesthetic level, I think is fine. That's great. But I so love comparing them from the thematic and the storytelling perspective of Vader, slashing humans out of a need for control and dominance and power, and Luke cutting down some robots so he can help a child who asked for his help. That is always going to be powerful to me. I think Filoni talked about this. Those initial moments, that build up, those are almost even more exciting to me than seeing his face, right? Of the X-Wing and the great one X-Wing and the, oh no, here it comes, that, All that build up to Luke and that build up of seeing that the power of a Jedi makes a difference, that the rest of these badasses are thinking they might be doomed. And Luke's just like, bye, 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 you're in my way. Yeah. All that stuff is still just incredibly powerful to me. And it was really, really great to revisit that. Luke's dialogue is so spot on, the emphasis on training and choice. So I just am absolutely in love with it from a character and a storytelling perspective, to the point where the tech of his face is sort of like, it doesn't really matter to me in the end, because I've so bought in on everything else. So the tech for me, it was really great to hear how they went about doing it. And revisiting it again, I still say what I said right at the beginning. It's fabulous when I look into Luke's eyes and don't pay too much attention to his mouth. That's where I'm at with the tech.
Yeah, we're going to get into some of the more detailed discussions on the tech. And there were some great quotes from a lot of people about why it worked for some, why it doesn't work for others. Why, you know, I thought of myself, who I watched Rogue One. I'm like, you guys can tell the difference between Peter Cushing and that? Because I've loved it from day one and moment one, and I have no problem with it. It's truly our perspective. It's a Star Wars lesson.
Yes, yes. Your perspective really does make a big difference on Luke's face, as they talked about in this episode, which I thought was really, really great. I'm going to sneak in a quick question because I forgot to write this down, and I felt like it was a question that was hovering over this Disney Gallery episode and they didn't acknowledge. How would you feel about a special edition of this episode of The Mandalorian if they wanted to do more tech work on it, on Luke's face in particular? How would you feel about that?
I'd have no problem at all, because I kind of want a Rogue One one to maybe even improve the Tarkin stuff and the Leia stuff. I'm on board with that. I think that's another thing George began that we all can be okay with going forward.
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is just if the original is always preserved and accessible, because I think storytelling should also be just a document of its time. So I'd be happy if you were watching The Mandalorian and you could hit a button to say, like, do you want advanced Luke face tech or original? That would be I don't know if they'll do that, but that would be my preference. All right, so let's get into our overall reactions to the special itself. Did you enjoy this episode of Disney Gallery? Were you moved, educated? What affected you? Give me your big picture.
I really, really enjoyed it. I love watching other people in the show get moved, and this one didn't necessarily move me. But guess what? 2 weeks from now, it could again. It's so well put together. These things are wonderful, and behind the scenes content is another like Star Wars tradition. Obviously, I know that goes beyond Star Wars, but it's a Star Wars thing we've loved since the beginning. Oh, that was great. They moved me. How did they do it? And how did they move me? So I love watching it. And there was some things on the tech side where I was like, okay, I got it. Now I see why you did that. Or I see what you did. And I see the massive hill you had to climb to make it so. Just the face, the voice, all those things. So I really enjoyed it on that level.
Yeah, I think for me, I think I was moved by the episode because the amount of sharing from everybody involved about how much it meant to them. And I always feel this way with tech, even if I feel like when I'm watching something, the tech doesn't quite work for me, which doesn't happen that often. I'm always moved when I actually see how much work and time was put into it and what a challenge it was and how much care and compassion and resources went into it. So I was just really thrilled to see the sense of care. And like, I know it's there, but we talk about it every week. And, you know, there can be negative voices that, you know, the easiest criticism is like, they just did it quick. Somebody was lazy, blah, blah, blah. And I just think that laziness happens so rarely. And it is great to just see and feel the sense of care about storytelling, tech, continuity, fans, right? I thought it was really interesting that this episode of Disney Gallery was structured to kind of have a thematic arc about fans' relationships. It's the first quote and it's the last quote of this actual episode, that they're really emphasizing that they are aware of the strength of connection, the emotional power that Star Wars has in people's lives. There's that great, great quote from Favreau about being aware of how much, frankly, podcasts and opinions there are, right? I think he said, if you choose to, you can dip into that river of information of feedback. You know, so he's really talking about that. And then it ends on him discussing this power of Star Wars being cross-generational, intergenerational, of the fact that it isn't just that it's family friendly, so you can watch it with your whole family, but this idea that at different ages you make different connections to Star Wars, and that because it's baked into the story of Star Wars, moments like this final episode of season two, where a child is kind of graduating,
yeah,
you know, and a parent is having to say goodbye, so you're getting it, the Star Wars story, from the perspective of Luke staring at the twin sons of the kid who wants to leave, and here's a story from the perspective of a parent who has to let go, you know, is it's really powerful. In the fact that Favreau is really talking about that he is very aware that is what is a part of what is the power of this, is the fans' connection and what it means to them at different points in their lives. I really thought it was powerful that seemed to ultimately be the focus of this episode.
Yeah, I love the stuff at the end about this particular moment representing something to a lot of different generations, right? Just like you talked about the parent thing, but just him saying, hey, some of those fans, they see themselves as Luke Skywalker, but they're not Luke Skywalker anymore. they've grown up with this and they're a different spot. So yeah, a lot of that really worked. And this one thing, the overall thing this special did for me and the galleries have done every time out is just, I just feel so safe. I almost said safe and secure, but safe and just kind of warm in the hands and the embrace of the creators of Star Wars these days. Every one of them, just I trust what they do, and if not all of it hits, the intentions are so great. I really believe that. From Kathy Kennedy on down, to the people, the VFX people, Landis Fields and his locked away in his office looking at millions of Luke faces. They're all putting care into this, and they do it every time.
Yeah, no, I was starting to write down quotes where I was like, yes, they're saying the things that we often talk about, of like how much they care and how they're weighing this decision and that decision and how everybody's working together and all these bounces. Like, I'm just now typing out the special, so I'm going to stop. I felt like that came across so clearly. I think the final big picture thing that I really got out of this and really enjoyed was seeing exactly what Mark Hamill's role is, right? Because when the episode first came out, we went on the emotional roller coaster of the actual story. And then as you come out into the credits, you're going into the sort of the real world story, and you see Mark Hamill's name there and you're like, wow, that's great. So really seeing what his role was, how it was approached, and just getting that kind of basic answer of like, okay, well, ultimately he came in and he performed it and communicated with the other actor. So you get this sense that at the heart of it, Mark Hamill is driving the performance choices.
I love that you pointed that out. I highlighted that as well. You know, this guy Landis Fields locked away working on the deep fake stuff and just putting it all together. And again, you touched upon it earlier, Joseph. Yeah, there was some criticisms lobbed at it, or they could have hired the 17-year-old kid in his basement doing a YouTube deep fake. They could have done that. And yeah, they could have. And I think this, to me, they weren't directly addressing that. They were just kind of looking in the direction of those conversations. But it was Landis Field, the guy looking at all these faces, that said, this was really about Mark Hamill having to teach the other actor, this guy Max, to be Luke. And he said that was more important than the tech, because that had to be there, who this character is, a character Mark Hamill's clearly very protective of. They highlight that as well. And I thought that was at the core of the tech. Without that, the tech's nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was great that all that stuff was coming from the tech people, right? Because they're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, we need this heart and this soul for us to do all of our cool wizardry.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit more about the tech process. What were the most intriguing things that you learned about the actual tech process of bringing Luke back? What grabbed you?
What grabbed me was Abigail Keller, the VFX supervisor, talked about the faces, right? And again, and I've seen some deep fakes put together at my old job. I've kind of poked over the shoulders and I just shake my head and go, I don't know how you do that or whatever. I don't know. I'll just watch the end result. She said everyone is an expert on faces, because this idea of really when you especially go back to original trilogy and you're looking at Mark Hamill, not just as he ages and then, you know, the infamous car accident and everything, but just how the lighting, how they shot each scene, there's kind of a different Luke for everyone. In fact, our friend, the great Brian Ward, put out a funny shot of the Kenner figure superimposed over the Mark Hamill body. He said, yes, we all remember him differently. And that was really... That means these creators didn't just have to go, yeah, we're going to find a way to put Luke on screen and have him look younger. How they had to make him, it's the impossible. It's like Luke himself, you asked the impossible. They have to make Luke look the same for millions of us. And I can tell you from 17 years of my old job of gathering witness statements, I've never got someone get it 100% correct. You'd be surprised. Oh, here's what my grandma's missing. Here's what she's wearing. And she's not even in the... doesn't even look like what they described. It's crazy. and for them to address that of just like, you know, even Favre says, the outfit's not all black like you think. It's brown. Palpatine sitting on a purple chair. Just all these little details sometimes get lost on the big screen or, you know, the way they color them, everything. So I focus on that, Joseph, just like, wow, this wasn't just let's bring Luke back. Let's bring Luke back for everyone, which is nearly impossible.
Yeah, no, I love that conversation. I loved her quote about we're all experts on faces. And I think, you know, your great stories of dealing with actual witness statements, it really is about truth versus perception, right? Like we understand faces so intuitively that we sometimes don't have the greatest words for them. Mm-hmm. And I love that this was a discussion of like what makes Luke Luke, as they said,
yeah.
Because, you know, is it what Mark Hamill really truly looked like at that age in that era, or is it about how we perceive the character of Luke? Because this many people have stared at this specific still the most, you know.
Yeah,
is it Luke on the sail barge with the green lightsaber that was most of the trapper keepers in 1983? Is that Luke, you know? I really like that. And as a visual artist, my skills are very, very rusty at this point, but I did go to get a degree in visual art, drawing and painting. And I just think Mark Hamill has a face that just does look very different from different angles and different lightings. Mm-hmm. All of our faces do. But in my opinion, from my experience of drawing faces, some people have faces that have a wider range. Mm-hmm. And I think Mark Hamill just does. So I thought that was really fascinating.
He absolutely does. They highlighted like the first shots on Hoth. And again, yes, you can make reference to this infamous car accident. He suffered and everything. That's why they did the Wampa scene. Whatever. It doesn't matter. That as a kid, I remember going, that's Luke. It really did look different to me. Just everything about it. It's like a flatter face. He's got the helmet. He's got the, and I remembered that differently than the other Lukes. Fascinating discussion.
Absolutely. If it's just age or, you know, yeah. Whatever is the true story behind a kind of urban myth of the car mm-hmm. accident, I don't really care at this point myself, whatever that is. I just kind of feel like even if you just went with Return of the Jedi, there is still so much change mm-hmm. and so much different attitude depending on perspective and lighting. So, yeah, I really enjoyed that discussion. The other part of the tech for me that was really big is the voice. I was totally in on the voice of like, that is perfect. I remember just feeling like that of, you know, the face, the tech, whatever. I was so in on it in that voice. I love every line of dialogue. I think every line of dialogue is perfect in that voice. Come little one. It's so peaceful and so perfect. Mm-hmm. And I thought like, wow, that is Mark Hamill, and they just got amazing tech to de-age voices. Turns out I was entirely wrong, right? That the voice was created by this app Respeecher, right? Which mm-hmm. is just you put in a bunch of data on people's voices, examples, and they put it together. How did you feel about that one?
Scared. Afraid.
Yeah, it's people who have massive libraries of voices, right? If anybody wanted to make us say anything, they could, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
talking about Star Wars, we have made every vowel sound possible, right?
Scared, but I'm too. I no shame in admitting I hadn't even thought for a second that wasn't some version of Mark's voice. You know, because he played he voiced himself in Forces of Destiny younger, and you could tell it was him doing a younger self. But it still was him. Right. I remember that the voice seemed quote unquote different, but that's, I'm truly lying. If I said I was suspecting something, I didn't. And this was like I had to put down my coffee. Whoa.
Yeah, and it was Mark Hamill, right? Because it, mm-hmm. in a way, because it really yeah. is taking sounds that he has made and recombining them into these great lines of dialogue.
Correct.
Final thing from the kind of the tech side is I talked about really being happy to understand how Mark Hamill exactly contributed what he did. And with that, we also got to an understanding of what the other actor did. The actor's name is Max Lloyd-Jones, but I was deeply amused that they did not say Max Lloyd-Jones. They're just like, you know, the other guy, Max, he was good too. And like, he's an actor with a long resume. They talked about how he was cast, but I don't know why in this special, they just make it sound like, yeah, Max. Yeah, we found him out behind a 7-Eleven.
I'm glad you looked that name up. I didn't do that. And I just, yeah, that was absolutely hilarious. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know this Max guy. I don't think he has some big ego, but you got to be at home going, say it. Say more than Max. I'm Luke. I finally can tell people.
I'm Luke. Yeah, and he clearly did a great job performing all the lightsaber, or a lot of the lightsaber stuff and, yeah. and everything, you know. So, yeah, shout out to Max Lloyd-Jones. If I had to guess, and I'm totally guessing, it just seems like this is a celebration of Mark Hamill, and they wanted to acknowledge Max Lloyd-Jones' contribution, but didn't want to make it about him.
Yeah.
In this particular instance. But he did a great job, and his name is out there now. Not just Max Lloyd-Jones. All right, Ken, let's move on then to what we found most interesting in terms of the storytelling philosophy behind the return of Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, the highlight for me that the title sentence of this part of the essay here is Luke had to serve this story and not his own story. I think it was it Richard Bluff that said Luke was kind of a device.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great way to just go back to, there's this other statement of wish fulfillment meeting expectations of the story. So wish fulfillment of many fans, some fans, some, you know, we know didn't want Luke there, but just aligning that up with the expectations of this story and serving the one that they've, you know, this 2-year completed arc that we now got from Grogu and Din. And I think they did. That's where I think they really nailed it. So I love that they clearly had to go into that knowing that's what they needed to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, we are on the very same page here. I loved how much they talked about being hyper aware of not having Luke's presence take over the story. And yeah, and it was Peyton Reed who said he's a device in Din in Grogu's story, and the audience is going to go on an emotional journey of their thrill at seeing Luke. And for a moment, our emotional journey is going to be flashing back to all of our relationships with Luke and what does it mean to us that he's returning. But it did segue so beautifully and so well. And I'm glad that they spent a little bit of time talking about how they constructed that and the ET comparisons. It swings back to, you know, Din and Grogu and for Luke returning in the huge just explosion of emotion that was evident on social media. There was just as much of explosion of emotion of Din taking off the helmet and Grogu touching his face, like that's it's just as emotional. And I think they really succeeded on that.
It's so weird. I had not seen ET since the 80s, and I just did a rewatch of that for our channel over there at the GPA, and you know, loved it. It's a classic for a reason, right? It's one of those things. And so I had that fresh in my head, and when Peyton Reed brought that up, I was like, oh my god, it just worked. It really worked, and taking a moment with all the characters in, and just they played it really, really well. And your first question of like, how you feeling about this Luke moment now? I think I'm going to get even more enjoyment out of it when you put all these pieces together. And that's what I love. That's what you and I love about this stuff, right? Just, you can continue to go back to the Star Wars well and just be nourished again and in a different way.
Yeah, yeah, and in comparing it to life experiences you've had since the first time you watched it or other storytelling that's come out, it is just very, very rich. And it, I think it's great that we get to see how much people care about it like this and care about the storytelling. Another little beat that I liked is Filoni saying if he had been, oh, no, Luke is, that's, I'm not sure about that Jon Favreau would have respected that, and them kind of saying that we were really aligned on this, right? Because we've kind of gleaned from lots of things that they've said, and it's our opinion interpreting things that they've said, that, you know, Favreau is really approaching this from, I was inspired by the things that inspired George, and I want to push and pull and see where I can go. And Filoni obviously truly believes that Star Wars needs to evolve and needs to have the new, but he's also very much protective of like, but what are the parts of Star Wars that are stable and should remain stable, you know? So it was just really great to hear them both kind of reflect on that balance of we want to create things new. We're getting the support from Kathleen Kennedy to, you know, be daring and try different things, but we're also really, really aware of what feels right, what is right, given the storytelling, given the philosophy, you know, and that I think that really came through.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to tell you, you know, all due spotlight on Filoni and his interpreting Star Wars and telling people about it, and everyone gets chills listening to him talk. I do too. I think Favreau is underrated in that regard, and this one actually kind of made me hopefully other people will pick up on that as well. He is a storyteller. He loves this. And if he doesn't know every little detail, you know, Peyton Reed didn't know. I think Plo Koon was from the other one. I don't know. You know, you can get caught up on that. And Filoni knows it backward and forward and as he should and as you'd expect. But everything Favreau said in here, when that thing of, you know, there's room for all archetypes, talking about again, you know, hey, maybe not Luke this time around. And when he talked about how in this day and age, everyone has their own login, which means everyone in your house or your friend group or your family, your relationship is looking for different things out of storytelling. And Star Wars has to exist in this modern world. And I think we have a belief here that it's succeeding at it and exceeding expectations by giving you know, different elements to everybody while also still capturing the magic. And Favreau has a really good handle on that. And I, you know, not surprised. I love Swingers, that was one of my favorite things about this particular episode.
Yeah. I think one of the other things that really affected me about the storytelling philosophy, or I guess actually the storytelling process, is one, just hearing one of the creators say, "Hey, this was great to wrap up the 2-season arc of Grogu's story." Like, That has felt evident to me as a person who watches Star Wars and talks about it and is a storyteller myself of like, this feels right. Yeah. This feels like that is resolved. And the continuation of the story is Din standing there with a laser sword that gives him responsibility that he's not particularly interested or knowledgeable about.
Yeah.
But that was just like, that was a little bit of a gut punch of like, I know this, but it's a thing to hear it of like, yeah, no, that's Grogu's story. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? Of like, yeah. I knew that, but then it was different to hear it.
Yeah, we're waiting for the Grogu Jedi Academy movie. Maybe that's gonna come. yeah, no, absolutely. That was a gulp. Like, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I'm there with you on that.
Yeah, and then also the final thing for me, just kind of the timeline of when they were working on this. You know, it's a long time ago, but just really having it confirmed that they're going over to Mark Hamill's house with his Luke Skywalker costume and the Grogu doll in December of 2019, right? When the final episodes of The Mandalorian Season 1 are airing, you know, Rise of Skywalker has either just come out or is about to. It's a real moment in Star Wars, but I just think hearing that timeline and remembering that creators are way ahead of fans. Again, this is something that I think everybody logically knows, but emotionally we can forget to focus on.
Yeah.
That season 2 is not a response to our response to season 1, right?
So true.
That they are so far ahead of it that these decisions are being made and move forward on so far ahead. So they're really telling the story that they think is right to tell with all that respect that you hear them giving to fans.
Yeah.
And it's such an awareness that everybody has an emotional reaction to it and such a sense of responsibility. But also, like, that's their job and they should be doing it, of going, what is the story that I want to tell with respect? but you know, they are not waiting to listen to, you know, an aggregate of 40 podcasts and then go, what should we do?
So wait, you're telling me, and I'm going to get snarky. You're telling me that when I was fortunate enough to stand at an after party and see Rian Johnson and JJ in the same space, that JJ didn't come up and say, I'm going to go against everything you just did, that the script and everything was already written. Are you telling me that, Joseph?
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I am.
Okay. I'm going to make a note of that. All right, cool. Yeah.
That's my strong opinion. Final question here for the first half of our podcast is, we gotta address the Jedi in the room. How would you have felt if Grogu was indeed rescued by Plo Koon?
I would have enjoyed it. I would not have started a hashtag to say this is the better choice over Luke or the less better of a choice. It would have been the choice, and they would have made it work. Like, oh, seriously, they would have made it work. I also think I would have had a hearty laugh.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the whole thing is, I think when we are watching the show, the season two of Mandalorian, and it is building to, oh, wow, it looks like this is happening, that Ahsoka's given the advice, aren't many Jedi out there, but have him call and one might show up. And, you know, we did all our podcasts about, well, who is going to show up? It turns into a drop down menu, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But that is not the way the storytellers are necessarily coming at it. It's just, it's really about what is the story that we want to tell. And it sounds like they were really like, this, we want to tell this story about Grogu, who would rescue him. Mm. Well, of course it's Luke Skywalker. So it doesn't seem like there's, it was ever, you know, maybe Quinlan Vos, maybe, like, you know, yeah. That's not the way they're approaching it. So I feel like if Plo Koon had arrived,
yeah,
it would be because there's a storytelling reason that they have a story to tell with Plo Koon, or have the story to tell about the Jedi who survived Order 66, but didn't really rise up during the rebellion. Right. So I feel like if I saw Plo Koon, I would be like, oh, this means they are better, in my opinion, announce the Plo Koon Disney Plus series, because how is he here now? Why is he active now? Why is he answering cries for help now? So I felt like if Plo Koon showed up, that to me would have been the announcement for the Plo Koon Disney Plus series.
That would have worked. That would have worked. I think you made reference to it earlier, but there's a moment there. And again, timeline, and they're coming up with this idea, you know, in 2019. But Filoni kind of said something about, like, you know, like, of all the characters to come get the child, Grogu, who's been, you know, swept up and stole the hearts of the world of fans, Luke kind of is the only one. Not just, I didn't take that just as story-wise, which I would agree that is, or think that is the case, but just as fans, like, who could we give the responsibility of Grogu, the child, the merchandise monster we love? Who could we give that to? Oh, it's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, and I think that's a really great point. I think it was Filoni who said, yeah, you got to have somebody who you trust that he leaves with. And obviously, there's more story to be told of eventually what happened to Grogu. I still talk to fans who have deep fear that Kylo eliminated Grogu, which I don't think that's going to be the story. So obviously, there is a story to be told down the road. But to me, that seems like a story possibility. I think using Luke made it feel like a button. It made it feel like this is Grogu's story. Grogu went to where he needed to go, the most trustworthy Jedi possible at this time. And it's not a, who's Quinlan Vos? Like, look, I want to see Quinlan Vos back, but it's not like, you know, I think if Plo Koon took Grogu, it would feel like Grogu's story isn't resolved. And Luke taking him makes it feel like his story is resolved for now.
Yeah, I really agree with that. There's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Final thought for me is, I love that they show the length they went to. Everything is funny. The artwork, the cool mask designs, the Plo Koon's head on Luke, super funny. But I love that they showed the fake script. And Plo Koon's line when he bursts in is, which one of you is Grogu? Which is just hilarious to me. And I wish James Arnold Taylor and Matthew Wood would get together and record that line as Plo Koon.
Yeah, it'd be great.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss some of the other interesting philosophical tidbits we got from this episode of Disney Gallery. All that in just a moment.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout.
36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4 Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4 Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back. We've talked some of the big picture stuff, but I just wanted to pull out a couple of the details that grabbed us both, Ken. I wanted to focus in on this Mark Hamill point and joke. Mark Hamill is so great. He has such a great sense of humor, and sometimes he makes a good point and a joke at the same time. And he described it that way, of kind of joking with George Lucas, where he compared the original trilogy to James Bond just getting his license to kill, the idea being that the original trilogy makes Luke a fully formed Jedi, but then we don't get to see his exploits as a Jedi. And there's kind of a similar conversation happening right now about Rey's journey in the sequel trilogy. She's all set up. She's got her yellow lightsaber. She is a Jedi. What's next? Arguably the same conversation with Finn. And in some ways, I think the same is true of the prequel trilogy, of it gets Anakin where he's going to go. And in some ways, the Clone Wars animated series makes room for all of those just fun, but also meaningful exploits that Anakin has as a Jedi. So I would argue that the point that Mark Hamill is making is true of all three of the trilogies, that they are about the characters becoming who they're going to be. What do you think that says about the nature of Star Wars storytelling?
I think it's just a series of it's the journey, not the destination stories. And tying to the growing up and the choices and all those things, which doesn't mean the destination doesn't start a new journey, right? It's Minnesota's own Semisonic that sings every new beginning to some other beginning's end. New journey should continue to change the characters, right? Like or form the character, reform them, and that's always kind of potentially dangerous when you're doing that. I look at The Last Jedi. Of that being kind of a destination, we find Luke at a destination. He's reached that point, and maybe it even begins at the end of Jedi, or maybe at the end of Mando, somewhere along the timeline, right? And so when you sit down for Last Jedi, yeah, I understand. There's going to be a lot of disappointment. Going, he has a license to heal, and I never got to see him use it. but that is that Octo is now the end and then the beginning of the next chapter of Luke's life. And Star Wars is just about that. And I think it ties into a lot of things we might even talk about here with hope and morality and choices and all those things we celebrate every week on Force Center. But I think Mark's point is correct. Like it's correct. And that's the point. And hopefully maybe one day you get more storytelling or you just get to imagine it.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, if you are fans of the new Jedi Order and the expanded universe, you got all those exploits in book form. That's part of what people really love about Luke. So I certainly want to acknowledge that. I think for me, it's just this really huge reminder that the three trilogies are coming of age stories. You said it well about they're the journey and you get to the destination at the end. But I think especially the original trilogy, that is a coming of age story for Luke Skywalker. I think a sequel trilogy is a coming of age story for Rey. For the prequel trilogy, you coined the great term coming of rage. It's a coming of rage story for Anakin. And then we don't necessarily see the exploits of Vader, except for in the comics. And then we got to see the exploits of Anakin in the Clone Wars. So I think it's just this really profound that is baked into the heart of Star Wars, a coming of age story. Mm-hmm. And whether that's coming of young age or coming of middle age or coming of end of life age, that they're stories of transitional moments and deciding who you want to be is really powerful to Star Wars storytelling. I also really gravitated toward this because I think it's a really interesting way to talk about some of the differences in narratives that I think as a culture we've been discussing more because we're absorbing so much storytelling. We talked about this previously, that there's this difference between serialized storytelling where every chapter is continuing one main story, one main journey, right? And then there is the episodic storytelling, which is the one-off adventures. And those one-off adventures are often featuring characters who are steadfast, who just go and have a fun journey, and they're not fundamentally changed by the adventure that they have in the episodic storytelling. And I think it's so interesting to think about serialized and episodic because it kind of tells us what we want out of a story, right? Because the trilogies, the journeys, those are moments of great change. The characters are fundamentally changed by the adventures. Mm. And I think the question is, if you had like a Luke Skywalker animated show, there's definitely room for him to grow and change and mature and have ups and downs, just like Anakin does in the Clone Wars. But you do have to ask, how would people feel if there was like a Luke Skywalker animated show and it was truly episodic and it was his, you know, exploits as a Jedi, the same way James Bond movies, the vast majority of James Bond movies, James Bond doesn't change. He has an adventure. And you just spend time with the character you know, and what changes is the villain, the location, the action scenes. And I think it's really important for people to think about when they say, like, I want more Luke, I want more Rey. Do you want stories that are episodic where the characters are steadfast and the characters don't change a ton?
That's a great question because I'm thinking of Indiana Jones too. I would call it mostly episodic. And what connects is running jokes, right? Snakes and this or that, or going to school and not wanting to teach that, you know, and Bond. Yeah. I love the Daniel Craig Bonds because I think they're more serialized, right? You're absolutely more fun, but that's what I was never really, much as I love Indiana Jones, which also, again, Spielberg, I'm going to direct a James Bond movie. George says, I got something better, but something similar. Even though I love those, I didn't get pulled in by the Bonds because there's something about that reset button at the beginning of each movie that, you know, I don't know, doesn't connect with me because I think maybe I still need to come of age. So great question, because it could work for Luke. It really could work. And even I would have to go into it, reminding myself, like, hey, this is going to be different. Luke's not going to come out of every episode going, and now I learned that. That's a great question that I'm even asking myself, you know, would I be into that?
Yeah, no. And I think Indiana Jones is a great example where a character can go through something. Like, I would argue in the first film, he kind of has some amount of resolution with his relationship with Marion. And the third one is certainly about his relationship with his dad. But that's an individual element. He doesn't end up going, and now I am more complete as Indiana Jones. Like, he hasn't changed who he is. He's worked through a relationship, right?
Yeah.
So you have room to challenge the characters. But I just think, like, this episode of The Mandalorian is kind of a great example, I think, to Mark Hamill's point, of one of his exploits as a Jedi. And the whole point, to me, of Luke's appearance and why it works is because it is not about Luke. Luke is a beautiful, kind Uber ride. He is asked to come pick up Grogu, and he does, and it is so not about him to the point that he doesn't even inquire what's going on on this bridge. Bunch of Mandalorians and some fallen Imperials. I'm sure you guys all got some stuff to do. I'm not engaging unless you ask me. That's how deeply it's not about me. That's how deeply it's steadfast in an episodic adventure for Luke.
Yeah,
I went and did this thing that I was asked to do. It's not about me. I'm not changing.
So true. So true.
Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me dive in and indulge on that fascination.
Yeah.
Let's dive into some other stuff here. Favreau and Filoni talk about Jon Favreau getting teary-eyed at the sight of R2 interacting with Grogu. Favreau says he doesn't know why that is. Why do you think it is that he got teary-eyed specifically at R2?
I mean, you and I just did a droid episode where we said, did anyone love R2 in the 80s? Was he the favorite character? You know, Mark Ellis and Jon Favreau, two people I could say that's the answer now. Look, here's the thing. I completely understand because I don't understand myself, right? Like, right? It just gets you. It just why, you know, the points that I cry at Rise of Skywalker, I kind of understand why. I kind of know what it connects to. But why does it still get me? And why am I so pulled in by Star Wars? It's Favreau's crying because it's Star Wars and it's his heart. It's his childhood. He still loves telling the story. He's mentioned it a few times. I was an usher in a theater and I saw this all the time. That's how much I love it. I don't know all the scenes from Empire by heart like Filoni does, but man, this is in my heart. And I think we all experience that complete lack of understanding what the tears are rolling down your face.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a beauty in just saying, you know, let me just feel it. I don't need to overanalyze it. But I'm going to ruin that beauty and I'm going to overanalyze it. I just think him saying that really reminded me of the absolute power of that Force Awakens trailer of Han saying, Chewie, we're home, or Han saying, it's true, all of it. You know, I think that sometimes in the storytelling of Star Wars, that the core ingredients of Star Wars just kind of come to the surface. And I think that there's something about the nature of Star Wars. Filoni calls them, you know, magic characters, that there's magic in them.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, there's this absolute triumph of childhood joy over any world-weary cynicism, right? And I think the way Favreau is talking about, like, look, it's all cool. I'm always amazed, but I'm also there doing my job and I'm paying attention. And yep, other people were breaking down at Mark Hamill and I get that. But then this little droid came in and I don't know why that's what finally got to me. And I just feel like because that's the character that he had attachment to is just like his own childhood joy triumphing, not even over him being cynical, but him like wearing the armor of adulthood, right? Mm-hmm. Of saying, I am here to be in charge of this. This is great. I'm loving it, but I'm kind of emotionally putting that to the side and I'm doing my job. And here's something that comes in. R2-D2 rolls in just like, for just a second, take all the armor of adulthood off and just feel that joy. And I think the fact that that can happen to me is just like, it's this feeling of a dream, a fantasy coming true. It's that feeling that Star Wars is this step into a larger world that philosophically argues that there's a connection between all of us. There's a bigger world, a bigger reality out there, and we can feel it. We can all be a part of it, right? Yeah. And here's this droid just literally rolling in and making this professional adult feel that way, right? It's this ancient past reawakening, a thing that he thought never could return, returning.
Yeah. You didn't ruin anything. I think you made it even better and deeper, and has those meanings. And you and I even talked about in some of our favorite R2 moments on that Star Wars ranked. I highlighted this one too. Of just there's something so warm and comforting about R2 being the one having that little moment with Grogu, almost making Grogu feel safe. And perhaps that's what R2 kind of provides all of us, especially if you grew up in that era. It's just R2's here. We're gonna be okay. We're going to be okay. The picture is complete.
How could there be any problems? In Filoni's story about, telling Jon Favreau of like, look, R2's going to be there too in that picture. That was all like really sweet and awesome.
Oh yeah. I'd love to. He sell that little art piece for charity or something. I'd put that on my wall in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. And I think, you know, Filoni made some really good and kind points about that full circle of this character that you created, John, of Grogu, interacting with this character you love, that there's a real beautiful full circle there.
Yeah.
And speaking of things being beautiful, Filoni makes the point towards the end that ultimately Star Wars should leave you with a good feeling or an uplifting feeling. Do we agree with that, Ken? And if so, why?
I 100% agree with it, specifically for Star Wars. That's what's at the core of this. That's why I think it was created. And look, if you want an R-rated Vader series, or you want some R-rated Star Wars, you just really wanted to see a Padme Anakin sex scene, I got nothing for you other than go chase your dreams. I get it. Everyone knows I'm this Game of Thrones fan, and there's some stuff in there that still makes me blush or makes me squeamish. I'm not opposed to that. I love the Deadpool series. I'm not opposed to any of that. I just don't think Star Wars was built on that. But if you're going to use darkness, and there's darkness in Star Wars.
There's a little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I can still hear the cries of those 9-year-olds behind me at the Cinerama Dome during Revenge of the Sith, watching Palpatine be electrocuted by his own rays there. Darkness does have a place in Star Wars, because that darkness is kind of used as a mirror, and we should learn from that reflection of the darkness of the story of the world, of yourself looking back at you. And it's important for those lessons to move you forward with the sense of hope. If this is about change, we all have to face that long, dark tea time of the soul where you dig in deep and you see what's there. It might be literally Rey at a cave mirror, as we talked about on a scene by scene. And it's just that simple for Star Wars. And tucked in at the end of the Mando gallery, this episode, I think it was episode 2 of season 1. So many colons. Tucked into the end of that now famous Filoni Duel of the Fates speech, which I watched again this morning, and it is wonderful. But the end of that is this idea of George Lucas telling him, remember to make these stories hopeful. Remember to give that to kids because they really need it. Star Wars was built on that, and that is what Filoni is talking about to me. It's present in other stories too. Other big myths and fables. I'm a Lord of the Rings guy too. I love the hope at the end, the joy of Frodo and Sam and everyone gallivanting around and rollicking around in a bed. Love it. So much hope. But Star Wars specifically needs to be built on this.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think I really love dark storytelling. And I think I've gone through my journey, like when I was young, a lot of television in particular in movies were episodic. Like no matter how awful something happened, the characters would just seem to forget it the next episode or next movie. And it seemed like nothing really lasted. Mm-hmm. And I think that gave myself and many people of my generation a real hunger for let's have truly vicious things happen to our characters and let's see them actually impacted by it. Because it was a weird contrast to grow up in the 80s in particular, when like if nuclear war doesn't get you, AIDS will, or razors and candy, but nothing will ever harm a sitcom character, no matter what. In fact, no life experience seems to change them in any way, shape, or form. So I think I've always had a love for the dark and gritty and the broody, because it feels real and then therefore honest. But then I think we've had now literally decades of kind of gritty, sometimes gritty storytelling told for the sake of being gritty, you know?
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have anything to say, if it's just like, yeah, we went there. We killed people. We ended on a really down note. Yeah, we went there. Unless I'm learning something, it's just sort of like, I know the world can be really rough. Mm-hmm. I don't need to just be reminded of that. And I think that's why I've come to love Star Wars, because I think Star Wars has so much darkness. If you break it down, Star Wars is basically, I think, it can get distracting because we talk about hope and the word hope gets used a ton in the storytelling. But I think Star Wars has so much dark storytelling to kind of tell you, look, these things are real and they're, some amount of it is always going to be there. There's going to be pain. There's going to be suffering. They always exist. But here's the great thing. Hope is always there too. And when you look at some like the darkest stories and the darkest eras, the fact that Revenge of the Sith is quite brutal, but what image does it end on, right? Luke with the kind adoptive parents, you know, staring out in hope, right? Bad Batch, we are loving because it's all about, hey, the entire galaxy is suddenly realizing, oh no, we're utterly screwed. But who are we spending time with? This young, hopeful, buoyant figure of Omega. And I think there's just so many examples in Star Wars that really takes the time to say, we are being honest with you. We are not handing you just like a motivational poster and going, don't worry about it, put on a smile and everything will be fine. It's really saying there is horrible darkness, but here's the thing. Here's how you get through it. Here's how you have hope. Here's how you have friendship. Here's how you have family. Here's how you pick yourself up when you fall down. The hope works because there's so much darkness.
Absolutely. I mean, Star Wars has it began for us all in 77 with a floating death ball wiping out society as we know it, one planet at a time.
Right?
The shadow of darkness was literally floating over all of us there in that story. Yeah, look, it's sometimes it's each your own, but like in terms of music, I love a good rock pop song and everything, but like Replacement singing Here Comes a Regular, which is sad and depressing, but also I find rays of hope in it because it helps me look back at who I am and how I can move forward for things, right? That's just some of things I love. But I think you're right. I don't mean just make a flippant joke, but if you really are craving Anakin slicing people in threes or something and you want to see it, I if it's used correctly, I'm there for it. But how you use it. And the big thing you and I always go about, the why of it, the why. Star Wars wants you to ask why. If you can answer that in a good way with that violence or that grittiness, I'm there for it. I just don't think the answer often comes back, we don't need it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm happy to see Vader cut people in threes as long as I, you know, learn something.
Yeah, well, because this is what we do. And that you mentioned the Vader Rogue One hallway scene. You and I love that scene. We love it for a lot of reasons. We love it because, wow, we see Vader go full Vader. And I'm sure we've mentioned on the show 10 times. I'm so sorry, folks. But like it popped in my head recently because someone's like, "It great scene. It doesn't do anything. Doesn't do anything." And I'm like, I told this person, it shows the Vader fueled by anger and violence and destruction got nothing. The thing he needed, he watches it flying away. That's the point of the scene. It's the point of that darkness should be a reflection that either you learn from or you don't. That's just my thought.
Yeah, no, then that control slipping away from him. It's a fist tightening, right? And just that little disc, that little symbol of hope, like none of those men can get away from him, but together they can get that hope away from him and keep it alive. That to me is the point. And you know, you talk about sideburns guy, bushy eyebrows guy in A New Hope, like, you know, there's also like inspiration in like those dudes are standing up against a true marching horror and they're like, no, we will not back down. Like, does that guy in the beginning of Hope know what happened to all of his friends,
right?
When he's concentrating there with his blaster, but he's still there. Yeah. Anyway, we could go off into a long Vader discussion, but we're heading towards our final questions here for this discussion of Disney Gallery. there's a ton of time at the end of this special, Ken, discussing the responsibility of deep fake technology. How did you feel about that? And are you going to watch Fantasia now that Jon Favreau made a whole connection between deep fake technology and the magic book in Fantasia?
I mean, a wonderful connection. It's been decades since I've seen Fantasia, and I was a little frightened. But those dancing mops are scaring me. Mom, turn it off. it's worth a review and repeat viewing. Absolutely. I oddly enough really liked it. It stood out, right? It stood out. They spent some time on it.
Yeah.
And I get it. And I was slightly amused by that, but also I really liked that they did that. Again, just remembering all the calls on the internet of just this and that and deepfake this and deepfake that. And I got to tell you, it's a Star Wars theme, powerful light, powerful dark, and anyone can have access to the tech. Favreau literally pointed that out. Anyone can just download this tech. You can do this at home. But again, why are you going to use it? And what are you going to do with it? It's a Star Wars question. It's a Star Wars quandary. A choice is in front of you. You and I talk about the Force, light and dark shows up. And every choice these characters make in Star Wars, whether they have a lightsaber and a cloak or not. And this was a Star Wars lesson right here.
I think that is exactly right. I totally agree with it. And, you know, speaking of the hallway scenes and the comparison between Vader in Rogue One and Luke in The Mandalorian, you know, I don't know if this was the choice, part of the choice for the Mandalorian creators. They didn't say on Disney Gallery to create those obvious echoes. But to me, it's one of the best images in Star Wars. You know, you see people posting like father, like son, and the great power to me of combining those two images, those two hallways is, you know, the metaphor of Star Wars is, yeah, we don't all have laser swords and can throw things across the room with our mind, but we all have power. We're all going down a hallway and we can choose how we use that power. And Vader makes one choice and Luke makes another. And I think connecting that to like deep fake technology and saying it's a power. It's a magic book. You choose how to use the power. We as a society are going to choose how to use the power. And please, please, let's use it responsibly. I thought was really interesting for them to focus on.
I think that's how Star Wars should be retitled. Star Wars, we're all going down a hallway. Episode 1.
Yes. And then my final more jokey thought on this was, I'm sure that's just the analogy that came to his mind, but aren't we lucky that it was a Disney movie that came to his mind so they could use clips? Because if he had used another movie as an example.
They should really, next movie playing, recommended viewing, Fantasia should really, synergy, corporate synergy. I'm okay.
It really worked with me. I really want to watch Fantasia. I haven't watched it since I was a kid. Any other moments or beats or ideas from this that you wanted to discuss as we wrap up?
No, all good. I love seeing, you know, Hamill at his home over there in Malibu, just playing with that toy. A lot of fun there. And then I, you know, Peyton Reed, man, you know, he did a really good job with his two episodes this season. And he's had a lot of success elsewhere, obviously. I just liked hearing him, getting a little time with him a little more, and his excitement, joy, and understanding, and also understanding when to get out of the way. Some great stuff on set of like, how should he do? He should just fist. Great. I love seeing that. And him mentioning that, yeah, I was doing behind the scenes documentaries on Forrest Gump. It was a reminder of your own career, my own career, everyone's choices and journeys in life. It's a long road, and don't give up, and you'll look back and be amazed at where you came from.
Yeah, no, the great stuff with Peyton Reed. I love that story of him asking Jon Favreau, are you messing with me? Oh, yeah. we're bringing the guy back. The guy. It's really good. It captured a lot. Just two other things for me. I was intrigued that they acknowledged that everything else leaked, that Ahsoka leaked, that Boba Fett leaked, and how much they wanted to keep this secret, which leads to my last favorite thing, which a lot of great stuff with Richard Bluff. But I loved the through line of him not being able to bring himself to say Luke Skywalker because he wasn't allowed to even say those two words
for
2 years.
Yeah.
It's like, I think I can say it now. That was really powerful and funny.
Yeah. Great stuff. Great stuff.
Excellent. Well, we lift our imaginary mime glasses to everybody who worked on this. It was truly great to see Mark Hamill in particular. I really want to highlight that because it was really great to see him, hear his thoughts, see him still being a part of this role. And great to see everybody who worked on this so hard to get to share it with them a little bit was absolutely great. That is it for our discussion of the Disney Gallery episode. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, you can find us on Twitter at Four Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Four Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of spots, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Amazon Music. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/4Center. You can support us directly at patreon.com/4Center. We still have those Four Center 1000 commemorative posters ready to go out. If you want to support at a top tier, one of the top two tiers, you get that poster just once. Just support us once and you get that commemorative poster designed by the great Brian Ward. Go to patreon.com/4Center for more. You can follow me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com. If you're local to SoCal, I got a comedy show coming up at the Ha Ha Cafe Tuesday night, August 31st. Details on my website. Joseph.
Excellent. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can get links to all of my other comedy adventures of all kinds on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, that is it for myself, for Ken, and of course for Plo Koon. This has been Four Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.